Good evening. I'd like to call the July 19th, 2011, a meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa is here. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
15 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of this meeting for personnel issues and possible litigation. Are there any? We have some members of the public who would like to address the legislature. I have a few people signed up. If anybody else would like to speak at the end of the signed up people, then you just come to the mic. There's a 3-minute time limit, and Kathy Covert will help you keep track of that. Ann Cedarholm first, and then Eugene Loveless.
Resident of the city of Ithaca, and I'm speaking for the County Office of the Aging. I am a member of the advisory committee of the COFA. I'm speaking about the issue of relocating the Office of the Aging. I have to say, originally when I learned that we were going to be going to the Carpet Bazaar building, I was really thrilled. It's very visible, it's very accessible, and the Office of the Aging has been kind of buried here in the basement of the courthouse for a long time with limited visibility and accessibility, which is so essential for the working of the Office of the Aging. Now, the thought is, in terms of moving, instead of locating us in the Bazaar Mall, locating us up at the Department of Health building on Brown Road. I'm really very much against that. It's another continuation of invisibility and accessibility. I feel that is really quite unfair. Essentially, we have more and more older people in the county, and we are needed more. I think that being in that building on Martin Luther King Street, our name will be up there, our telephone number. People will see us. Many people don't know anything about the Office of the Aging or where it's located. So I really feel very strongly about that. One of the things is, if you put the probation office in there, you have younger people that half are required to go there and must go there if they are going to prove their reliability and change their behavior. Our people don't have to do anything, but they want to do things, and it makes it very difficult. I think those, not to be punitive or judgmental, but I think that people on probation should make an effort and work and show their change in their behavior and their attitude. And I think that would be helpful, that we don't have to put them right there in a very accessible spot. And I just think, in terms of fairness, I think that would be wonderful if you all voted on having the Office of the Aging in that building. Thank you very much.
Eugene Loveless and then Judy Scarpella.
Okay. Eugene Lovelace. I live on Route 79 in the town of Enfield. I am also a member of the advisory board for COFA, for the County Office for Aging, and I talk, so I ramble on and on. So to keep myself from doing that, this is what I will say. When the county successfully concluded purchase of the Carpet Bazaar building on State Street, most of us were delighted to know that COFA would be able to move there. It addressed many of the problems that the courthouse location had. Now I'm hearing the move might be to Brown Road instead. Well, the Brown Road location is a fine building, ample parking, and surely can be seen as a financially attractive option. I think it's a short-sighted solution. With the steady growth of the aged population, COFA's services are of increasing importance to our community. For COFA to most effectively carry out its mandated mission, it should be easily accessible in some central downtown location. There's every reason to believe that increasing numbers of COFA's clients will be relying on public transportation. The links for public transportation to Brown Road are not good. There was some walk-in traffic in the basement of the courthouse, but one real attraction of the Carpet Bazaar State Street location was that this would increase very substantially. With the Brown Road location, that avenue of availability to COFA services is essentially lost. And even for those elderly who drive, the Brown Road location is out of the way, to say the least, not close to any of the things they would drive into town for. It is, for most of them, in a place they're not familiar with. Though it's only a matter of a few miles physically, the psychological distance, especially for seniors unfamiliar with the area, makes this a hurdle that will cause many of them to simply pass up making any contact. Finally, the effective face-to-face contact and interactions between the staff of COFA and those at Lifelong, Human Service Departments, other county agencies that are in the downtown area would be seriously hampered by moving COFA out of some central location. So I hope that you collectively will decide the Carpet Bazaar State Street place is the right place for COFA. Thank you.
Judy Scarpella, then Leroy Walney.
I'm a teacher, so I promise to stay to my 3 minutes. I'm not going to repeat all the things that have been said before, but I am going to give you a number, 77 million, and that's the number of baby boomers who are turning 65 this year. Now, I'm sure that a lot of you in this room fit into that class. So I'm just going to tell you a personal story. About me. I recently moved into McGraw House, and that's because I think it's important for me to be an advocate for myself. Many people said, well, how can you move into a facility with all those old people? I don't think of it as being like that, and the word senior sort of bothers me. I look in the mirror and I still see a pretty vital person, but I look for information, you know, just because I'm getting older, I look for information, and I think it's my responsibility. I don't think it's always your responsibility to have to worry about that budget. I think it's also my responsibility to keep up with what's happening in the world, whether it's on the local level or on the national level. So I go to workshops, and the Office of the Aging is present. I gather information, but I've chosen to not have a car anymore. I mean, this is a green community, and I also want to save expenses. So I want to have some of the things in my life so that I can cut expenses accessible. And when I heard that the Office of the Aging was now going to be in my neighborhood, I was overjoyed. I have read all the information on saving the taxpayers' money. But you're making a decision for me, and you really haven't checked with me that much. I like the location that's downtown. I could take the bus, but I really prefer, and I'd like you to think about those 77 million people who are turning 65, and about the other people like me who read the papers and who are online and who try to be well-educated and don't want you to make all the decisions for them, and think twice. I do agree with someone. I think this is sort of short-sighted. So thank you very much for your time.
Leroy Walney, and then Thomas Shibata.
Well, she just gave you my name. I'm 87, and I've lived in Enfield for about 21 years. I was president of Enfield Seniors, and I worked in the Enfield Food Pantry for about 20 years, and I've been active in other civic activities there. These activities have enabled me to become familiar with the residents of Enfield, both young and elderly, and what their needs and attitudes are. In the broader area, I'm currently chair of the advisory committee to the Office for the Aging, which I've been a member of for quite a few years, with a year rest now and then. And I serve on the board of Gadabout. Again, there you meet a lot of elderly people. For about 15 years, I, along with my wife Kay, were active in area congregations together. Again, these involvements have helped me understand community needs. As they've mentioned, as I recall also, when we heard about moving into the Carpet Bazaar building, everybody was quite happy about it at the meeting when we heard it. Accessibility is a huge concern for the elderly. I am especially aware of it. Psychologically, I myself feel like driving out to the airport area is somewhat of a daunting trip, especially in winter. And what else could I do there? Downtown, I can take care of a lot of other matters at the same time. And one thing I've learned about Enfield's elderly is they won't go into town unless it's absolutely necessary, especially for just information. They want you to go to them. The Brownfield, the Brown Road location, I believe, would further increase their reluctance to visit the COFA office. As the others have said too, I think it's very short-sighted to move COFA way out there when the need is going to be greater every day. I thank you very much.
Thomas Shabbat is the last one who signed up.
First, I'd like to make an announcement that there are a number of places where I was never poisoned, and I think I just have to make a public announcement on this. For example, cafeteria at the Statler Hotel, Moosewood, Japanese and Thai food stores at the Farmer's Market, Miyake restaurant at College Town, Olin Cafe, there was one college student who did spray something on my brownie, but, and also no picnic settings. So, just to let people know that there are some innocent places as well. So, and also, slightly different topic. There are some police officers who say something like, you're not important enough to be subjected to electronic assault and organized stalking and so forth, and therefore I should just go see a psychiatrist or whatever. But I have to say that organized stalking is probably used to undermine the Marshall's Federal Witness Security Program, which basically is a countermeasure for the Oath of Omata, or the basically, Oath of Omata is Oath of Silence, that organized criminal, especially the mafia members, are not supposed to tell the internal information of the mafia to the law enforcement, and that's something that is keeping the mafia operation. However, there are certain crime families which are immune to this kind of tune codes, and those families seem to be using organized stalking as a way to track down their members from giving information to the law enforcement when their members are giving grant of immunity in exchange for testifying for giving the information, basically what's happening in the in the mafia. So I think that's, and this kind of system has to be in place in almost every municipality to basically undermine this federal witness security program. So me being picked up is not necessarily, well, anybody can be picked up to just to keep this system in place, organized stalking, so that if any turncoats or any member of the crime family would try to leave, then that person can be easily subjected to organized stalking as well.
One more minute.
Okay. So that's one, and also the, often it's not only bribery that is used to infiltrate into the police, but also a use of gossip, basically a social fabric. That's a way to leak the internal information and to the intern use which is later used by the criminal family. So, but anyway, so the poisoning is largely no longer taking place right now. There's a program of phone tapping and email hacking and deletion of email messaging and so forth continue to take place. And also some of the investigation done by the police, probably due to some organized perjury, is that some of the information seem to be leaking to the criminal organization as well. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the legislature and the public? All right. I don't see any municipal officials out there. Okay. Legislator privilege of the floor. I think Frank Proto is first tonight.
Okay.
Right? Well, you'll sit down for those, okay?
I'm privileged to present the Distinguished Youth Award this evening, and I'd like to ask Emily McGuire and Erica Heisinger to come up. Trina, would you like to join them? And if Anthony Hobson from Ithaca College appears, we'll ask him to join us as well. Trina submitted on behalf of these folks this following letter, and I'd like to read it to you. The Tompkins County Office for the Aging would like to nominate Project Generations, a student-run organization at Ithaca College, for the Distinguished Youth Award. Project Generations is the brainchild of Melissa Stutzbach, a junior at Ithaca College. Melissa identified a need and decided to form a group of students to help older adults combat loneliness and a need for help in the home. This is an organization that has successfully partnered with the Tompkins County Office of the Aging to provide in-home assistance to older adults in the community. These students visit seniors once a week for an hour or so to provide companionship, assistance with light housekeeping, or respite for a caregiver. 23 students have been successfully matched. They also have had access to trainings on topics related to older adults, such as elder abuse, dementia, and the like. Our experience with this organization has been nothing short of amazing. They are conscientious and dedicated in their dealings with our clients. Melissa has been an outstanding leader with tremendous foresight, as she has recruited students from freshmen to graduate students who will continue to sustain the important work of Project Generations. I want to remind the board that a previous Health and Human Services Committee, Melissa came with Katrina's help and gave us a rundown of some of the things that they were doing, and I'd like to add to that little write-up. Project CARE has served the project through COFA, has served over 100 seniors and currently is serving about 45. Melissa started volunteering on a one-on-one program for seniors as a high school student, and I think you'll hear that from some of these folks too. She continued as an undergraduate, which led her to brainstorm about the concept and the impact these visits make. The program deals with recruitment and pairing of students with seniors, which is overseen by the County Office for the Aging. Training is provided to the volunteers and includes an orientation and educational session. mentoring, and monitoring of volunteers. The program will be mutually beneficial to students and seniors, allowing students to learn the value of community services, and seniors receive companionship, lighthouse work, and mental stimulation. The relationship with the County Office for the Aging can only strengthen this over time, and they hope that the association with Ithaca College will last for quite some time. Ms. Schickel noted the extremely comprehensive training included elder abuse and falls prevention students receive and is being completed by Melissa. The reason I wanted to do this in light of, and it wasn't just because these folks showed up tonight, believe it or not, that's just happenstance. There's been so much in the news recently about senior citizens and the effect and the importance on our community. When we had the opportunity recently reading the Ithaca Journal's article on this, I thought this would be a really nice way to say thanks to some of these younger people in the community who really volunteer their time. And what I'd like to do is ask you folks if you might at least give the board some background on the number of students that are participating, how long you've been doing this. And I told you I was going to embarrass you. So who would like to go first?
I'll do it.
Okay.
There are currently about 30 people in the club, and I think around 22 actually volunteering with an elderly in the community. And like you said, they're from freshmen to graduate students, and I think we've made a pretty big difference in the community. We also had an end of the semester banquet where we got all of our seniors to come together and we celebrated the program. We've actually only been on campus now. We started in the fall, last fall, and we finally got everyone out into the community in January, and we're hoping to continue in the fall and see a bigger outcome.
Well, why don't you tell these folks where you're from?
I'm from Rockland County, New York, which is kind of outside of New York City.
My name is Erica Huesiger, and I'm from Northampton, Massachusetts. I guess I'll share a little bit of my experience volunteering. I visited a senior who struggled with chronic depression, and she was a real big animal lover, but she didn't feel healthy enough that she would be able to take care of a pet of her own. So I went around asking my friends who lived off campus, and I borrowed kittens and puppies to bring to her to cheer her up, and I hope I cheered her up.
Well, just quickly, and not to be redundant, but these...
You have to talk into this thing.
You have to get down. these young women are amazing in their consistency, their conscientiousness, and their enthusiasm. When it sometimes would take me a little bit of time to find a match for them because of transportation issues, they would call me up and say, have you got somebody? Have you got somebody? They really enjoy doing this, and it is, for me, one of my great pleasures in the work that I do at the Office for the Aging, to see this population of young men and women who are so committed. It's really very inspiring. So.
This is something we have to apologize for. There is a very nice plaque which goes with the award. It comes from A&B Engraving, WHCU, the County Legislature, and Purity Ice Cream. Unfortunately, it hasn't arrived yet. So as soon as it does, we'll get it to Katrina. But in the meantime, there's a goodie bag here full of T-shirts from different organizations. There's a gift certificate here from Purity Ice Cream that you have to give to Katrina. And there's a pack of all kinds of stuff for you guys to share. But thank you very much. I think in light of the statement that was made about 77 million of us making it to Some of us aren't there yet, folks. I think this is delightful. Thanks. Really.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Thanks very much. Before I go to other legislators, I just want to mention that we often shuffle the agenda to take account of staff or public who are here. And if I can ask the budget chair to move to go to the first report when we get to the regular agenda, and for the sake of staff. And I just mentioned to the public that we are not going to be talking about the Office for the Aging move tonight. It's going to committee, and it'll be discussed at another meeting. So, okay, thank you. Any other legislators? Pat?
I just wanted to call to everyone's attention that we have a meeting of the Broadband Committee coming up on Monday, July 25th at 5:30 at the Borg Warner Room of the library. I'm going to pass around this little notice that to give you a little more information about the meeting itself, but I will say that Dr. Lavelle Brown from the Ithaca City School District is going to be our presenter at that meeting, and we're really looking forward to hearing from him. We have invited other superintendents and people from the local school districts, especially IT people, to come to this meeting to talk about the digital divide and ways that is going to impact the education of our children. And we expect that this is going to spark some very lively and topical discussion. And I sincerely would welcome any of you who would like to and could come to that meeting. So I'll pass this around to give you a little more information.
Thank you, Pat. Jim?
Short announcement, Grassroots starts Thursday in Trumansburg. The weather is probably going to be 100 degrees, so you can come, have fun, dance until you need a shower. But please come. It's a huge event in the county, and everyone seems to have a great time.
Thank you, Jim. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. A couple of reminders. First, the TCAT budget meeting that involves the three funding organizations, again, as a reminder, August 4th, 12 o'clock at the library. We won't have another county legislative meeting between now and then, so I wanted to get that on your agenda. Secondly, the Civil War Commission that Mike co-chairs is still looking for help on the Nurses Fund. And I'd like to ask you, if you haven't done so already, please consider a contribution to the Nurses Fund at TC3. It helps to establish and underscore the three scholarships that are being promoted. And last but not least, a couple of years ago, with the help of Dick Booth, this board helped to sponsor, and some of us worked on it, the Sampson Veterans Memorial Cemetery. If you remember, several of us were pretty active because the cemeteries are filling up, and sadly, but it's a fact. The one in Elmira is pretty much done, and the other large cemeteries that take national individuals that are associated with national recognition are filling up as well. With the help of Mike Nazzolio, Senator Nazzolio, we worked very hard to take part of the old Sampson base up in Romulus. And with the help of this board, you guys helped sponsor this. And I wanted to let you know that I'm on the commission with them. And we've met a number of times over the last 10 or 12 years. We have we've received all the funding from the state and the towns and this county. This county was relatively generous in its support. We're having a dedication with a grand opening on Saturday, July 30th at 11 o'clock at Sampson. Tim Joseph, who was and still is the commissioner for the Finger Lakes Parks Commission, attended when we originally cut the ribbon to start the work, and my hope is that he'll be there again on the 30th. You're all welcome to come. If you find yourselves in the vicinity of Sampson at 11 o'clock on Saturday, July 30th. And I want to personally thank this board for the help that it's been in the past. Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Carol?
Yeah, I wanted to thank the Tompkins County Public Library for hosting us yesterday. Was that just yesterday? For a presentation about their budget and the use of the library that a bunch of us had an opportunity to attend, and I don't have all my notes in front of me, but I just think that Susan Curry and her staff clearly do just an incredible job meeting the needs of an ever-increasing number of people in ever more difficult times. Those of you who weren't there, I encourage you to look, I think, in your boxes, maybe, or is this handout of her slides. There's a book, The Community Read, is waiting for you. If you actually go over there and pick it up, I think you can get that, and I urge you to participate in that. They always look for group leaders as those discussions continue. Just a few of the highlights that they presented that really struck me. Where first of all, the increase in use, a 20-some-odd percent increase in use from one year to the next, particular need in meeting people's computer needs, the numbers of employment, places of employment that won't take applications other than online, and the numbers of people who don't have a way to apply for jobs unless they can come to the library and get assistance. And for many of those people, they're also getting trained in how to do that. The IRS referring people to your local library to print out forms just to file your tax forms. The in 2010, they had online usage of 490,000 hits of some kind on their page. I wasn't sure whether those were single user or number of pages visited. But just in the first 5 months of 2011, the comparable number is now over 500,000. That was as of the end of May, people coming to web pages. We heard a lot about the ways in which their needs have increased, the ways in which they are trying to deal with that, and that they have come up with ways to absorb a bunch of the decrease, and their request to us was not, as we've heard in the past and that we hear from other agencies, please get us back to where we were before. That's not the request we heard. The request we heard was, please find a way to get us to 7.8% cut instead of 11.2% cut. For me, that was just so telling that you know, they really get the what we're facing. So I really thank Susan again and urge you to get your packet of materials and look through it and look carefully at what an incredible job they do for our community. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol. Will and then Brian.
Thank you, Martha. Just adding on to this, I was not able to make that session, but as I learned in my email this afternoon that there's going to be a second makeup session for anybody who would like to do it this Thursday, and I will be going. I hope others will join me. I think it starts at 5:30. And I also wanted to, in the spirit of Jim's announcement about grassroots, if you're not up for hot temperatures, there are wonderful theater happening in our community, and specifically plays currently running at both at the Hangar and at the Kitchen are extraordinary. They are funny and intelligent, and it's cool inside. So I would encourage you to get down to the Kitchen and go see At a Loss and the Hangar, which is ever so humble.
Thank you, Will. Brian?
I just wanted to report on this past Saturday in my neck of the woods, they held the annual Vietnam Veterans Motorcycle, it's not a race, but ride, which actually starts in Owego, New York, and I believe it ends in Sterling, New York, long ways. But one of the stops is in the village of Groton, and we were very much inundated. I'm not a bike rider myself. I'm talking about motorcycles, obviously. But there were literally hundreds upon hundreds of people, very, very well organized, very well behaved. There was a very nice memorial ceremony at the Terrence Grave Memorial, located right on Main Street. And if you get a chance to Route 38, which is that entire route, is Route 38. A while ago, it was designated as New York State Vietnam Veterans Highway. And I can remember donating myself to the fund to designate that. And they did a very, very good job of that. I've traveled from south of Dryden up to Auburn on that route. And you know how you go on an interstate and it'll say some sort of memorial, and you'll see one. There's got to be 30 of those signs in that, just that area that I was speaking about. And they're actually, a lot of times, right in people's lawns, and they're very well decorated with flowers, and you can't miss it. You have got to know that Route 38 is the New York State Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway. So if you get a chance to get up by there, check that out. It's really pretty impressive.
Thank you, Brian. Mike, did you have your hand up?
Brian, I certainly agree with exactly what you said. They all came by my office before they got to Groton, and there were hundreds,
yep,
of motorcyclists and other vehicles as well. And people were out applauding and waving flags, and it was very nice. I just wanted to say, Frank, thanks for bringing the young people to us today. And remember that it was Frank whose idea it was to do this every month for our young people. And I think probably by now we've done over 100 organizations and young people since this started. And I think it says a lot for our community. And I'm glad we continue to do it at our group. Something that troubles me about our young people are the tragedies we had this week, where two young people were hurt in the gorges, one of them apparently very seriously. I don't know what we do or how we can promote better education about how seriously people should take that you can't swim, you can't dive, you can't climb on our beautiful gorges. They are death traps if they are not used in a proper, safe manner. And I just hope that we can think about that. Think about, is there more signage that needs to be done? Is there more discussions in the school for the young people? Should we just be talking about it more every time the summer comes around when the kids are out more in the gorges? I guess it's a responsibility we all need to think about with our families, with our young people, and trying to keep things safe.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Pam?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention this event that I went to last Friday evening. It was the Congo Square Market, which is held at Southside Community Center, and as you may or may not know, the Congo Square, it was in Louisiana, was the one day a week on Sundays, the African-American slaves would go there and make music together, and it was their day of joining together. But this is the Congo Square Market. It happens every Friday evening. It's wonderful. They had a band. There was food, both cooked food and fresh vegetables and fruit. But what was so wonderful about it, in addition to those things, is that we were there, or at least I was there, in part to take part of a candidates forum, and there were lots of people there, But there were children running all over the place. They, you know, because they have at Southside, they have children's play equipment there. And it was this gorgeous summer evening where all these people came together to watch and learn about who might be their next mayor and the problems that we are facing. And I really was impressed with that and how important that is. And we need to make sure that that continues to happen in all our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Leslie?
Thanks, Mike, for just the public service and how we need to keep talking to our young people and protecting them and encouraging them to stay safe. And also thank you, Pam. It was a great turnout at the Congo Square Market, particularly because it was a forum, the candidates. So I want to encourage all those people who were there for the forum to continue to come to the Congo Market and support our young people. The fresh fruits and vegetable that's there comes from a farm that our young people work. It's worked by youth, harvested, and they come and they sell it at the market. And the Congo Square Market's been going on since June. It goes through September. And we'd love to see that same kind of crowd coming every week to support our young people and this effort. I want to encourage folks that there are alternatives to getting into dangerous behaviors, such as coming out on the Commons every Thursday night for the M&T Bank Summer Concert Series. The Downtown Ithaca Alliance is a sponsor. Wonderful bands. Actually, there's one Wednesday and Thursday this week. So if you like Zydeco, there's a fabulous Zydeco band on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, so every Thursday, a free concert right here in the Commons. July 25th through the 31st is Downtown Office Workers Appreciation Week, I think. I might have the title wrong. But it is an interesting time. And this set of activities happening in downtown Ithaca. And at the same time, there's also summer sales. We used to have sidewalk sales. It's been reconfigured. So it's now just summer sales. So please come down and support the downtown businesses. Enjoy the free concerts. Enjoy the performers who are usually out there. And stay safe doing some of those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? All right, Ed, we have glad to welcome you to talk about the Climate Showcase Communities program.
Thank you. I planned to do this about a month ago, and since then I've got a couple things I want to kind of contribute to this discussion a little bit, so if you'd bear with me for a second. 15 July 2011, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon today reiterated that humanity must give sustainable development greater attention, saying that the current model of using resources was putting a strain on ecosystems and exacerbating global warming, even as climate change remained a growing threat to people and economies worldwide. Our model of growth is not only obsolete, it is also dangerous, Mr. Bond said, speaking at a forum on sustainable development in Finland. He called for a revolution in favor of a sustainable development in which a green economy is driven by business, supported by governments, and embraced by the people. Sustainable development is the top priority of the United Nations and the international community. We have to work to address climate change, the food crisis, energy shortages, water scarcity, global health, gender empowerment. All are interconnected, Mr. Bond said. About a month ago, we had an intern who's been working with the Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative this summer. And she had a couple of days kind of free from her other work to work on something, and they asked us if we had anything that she could work on. So I said, well, since we passed the energy element of the comprehensive plan, what's the current status of climate change? And how's the scientific evidence kind of stacking up? And so she spent about a day or two researching that and prepared a little paper. Her name is Hannah Foster. I think some people here know her. She's from Ithaca. And what she wrote is, I think, both frightening, but also it also tells us something about the challenges our youth are facing and that they recognize. I'm going to just summarize some of what she put together. Recent extreme weather and natural disasters are a preview of what is likely to increasingly happen in the future. In the last year, China experienced its worst drought in over 60 years. In 2010, 2 million square kilometers of land in Eastern Europe and Russia were scorched by the hottest summer in 500 years. A flood the size of Germany and France engulfed Queensland, Australia, the worst natural disaster in that country's history. In the U.S., the Mississippi River is flooding, Arizona's fighting wildfires, Missouri struggles to rebuild from the worst tornado in decades, Texas is in its eighth year of an exceptional drought. Although it's difficult to directly link individual weather events to climate change, the chief of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, said recently that, quote, we are sure that the kinds of events that we've seen recently are likely to become much more frequent and much more severe. These carry additional risks. As forest fires become more common, they emit carbon emissions instead of sequestering them. The increasing rate of climate change we're actually seeing, it's exceeding the projections of 10 years ago, are starting to melt permafrost. The greenhouse gas gases that are held in the permafrost in the Arctic actually exceed the amount that's been introduced by humans since the Industrial Revolution. And there's a risk of that being released. A recent NASA report from this year said the polar ice caps are deteriorating at rates that exceed prior projections of as recently as 2007. Current rates of melting would result in an estimated almost six-inch rise in sea levels by 2050, and that's expected to accelerate. A recent study found that the seas along the Atlantic coast of the U.S. are rising at their fastest rate in over 2,000 years. The UN Refugee Agency claims that humanitarian crises that could be triggered by the effects of climate change have been vastly underestimated, with natural disasters and environmental degradation resulting in geopolitical instability, the creation of refugees, and violent conflict over diminishing essential resources such as water, land, and food. Climate change has also prompted serious concerns about food availability, according to Oxfam and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. Unfavorable conditions for growing crops, such as drought and excessive rainfall and extreme weather events, such as flooding and tornadoes, are expected to get worse. And this is how she, a young person in this community, summarized this little assignment she'd been given. We are at a juncture in human history, and the stakes for human survival have never been higher. Ignoring climate change and waiting for a better time to deal with it will not make it go away. Moreover, it will only be more difficult to effectively mitigate the consequences of climate change in the future. Local governments must lead the way forward in the face of continued federal inaction. While Tompkins County has committed itself to reducing its emissions 80% by 2050 and helping the community to achieve that same goal, it will be in the sustained effort to achieve those goals over time that true leadership will be seen. Bringing global emissions down to a safe level for humanity will require all hands to be on deck. If we are to alter our own and our children's trajectories for the better, failure is not an option. So that's just an introduction. But I can increasingly hear this same message from young people that we work with all over the place, that they feel that action has to occur and has to occur now. So in that context, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Climate Showcase Communities project and the larger effort going on nationwide. As you'll recall, we received a grant from the EPA, $375,000, to work with EcoVillage and others to demonstrate how we can build smarter, more efficiently, and much more energy efficiently and greenhouse gas less intensive in the future. It's called Density That Works, EcoVillage Concepts, kind of building on the experience of 20 years of development at EcoVillage and using current projects that are in the works to demonstrate and document the actual savings that can be achieved. We will be, in this project, undertaking several specific actions. We're going to document the best practices EcoVillage has developed over the time of its existence and what they've learned along the way. Create model building codes and policies that can be enacted by local communities should they choose to, that would support more energy efficient development. And apply those kind of principles to three demonstration projects that we will then monitor and evaluate to see how they actually perform and educate folks about the options that are out there in terms of how we can develop more effectively. This effort is significant on its own, but I think in context of things that are going on with other communities, it's even more so. I had a chance to attend a mandatory for grantees conference in May in Denver of the 49 Climate Showcase communities that have received EPA grants over the last 2 years. And it's a two-year program. It won't be anymore. It's these 49 communities. They represent all sizes of the communities in 30 of the states, including Native American communities in several cases. The grants supported residential, commercial, municipal, and school energy efficiency, renewable energy development, transportation, waste management, and smart growth. And I'm happy to say this community is involved in all of those things. We're only in one category, but we actually have initiatives going on that parallel many of the things going on in communities around the country. Thompson County is one of only two smart growth projects and the only residential smart growth project funded under the EPA Climate Showcase Communities Program. We're trying in this program, EPA is really trying to develop models for the rest of the country, recognizing they have limited resources and that a lot of the action is going to happen at the local level. And some interesting examples of what's happening in other places. The city of Houston is working with Nissan on a lease arrangement to provide privately funded electric vehicle charging stations that can take advantage of federal tax credits that municipalities couldn't take advantage of on their own. Alameda County, California has set a solid waste diversion goal of 75%. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's our goal that we're working on. They've reached 69% and are now targeting shipping container waste. They've found that they can substitute reusable containers for the old wood pallets and plastic shrink wrap and boxes that many products are shipped in and cut greenhouse gas emissions by 30%. And they have a fairly large industrial complex and shipping area there in the Bay Area of California. Little Rock, Arkansas is working with the Clinton Foundation and has instituted an employer-based home energy affordability loan program. Companies make improvements in their buildings, take the savings and use them to make loans to their employees to make retrofits in their own homes. And that's working very well in Arkansas. Cary, North Carolina has a project called Red and Blue and Green All Over, focusing on greenhouse gas reductions in fire and police departments. And they're going to create a Fire Chiefs Climate Challenge that will promote sustainability in fire departments nationwide. Salt Lake City, Utah is undertaking a Clear the Air initiative to promote alternative transportation. West Union, Iowa is developing geothermal district heating and cooling for its downtown. Bellingham, Washington is undertaking Community Energy Challenge, providing one-stop shop for energy efficiency to assist homeowners and businesses. And the list goes on. There's 49 communities doing different things. Part of the message for all these communities is as important as greenhouse gas emissions reductions are, there's other motivations for doing this as well. Because when you take action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you can also save money. Homeowners can save money. Businesses can save money. Create jobs doing this work. They're local jobs. They can't be exported. Promote energy independence. Become less dependent on other sources of energy. And improve community health. So those are all side benefits of the effort to combat climate change. So what does it mean to be a climate showcase communities? Well, what it's all about is documenting results, achieving recognition for those results, building capacity and collaborative relationships both within and among communities, creating models for peer-to-peer sharing with other communities across the country, and hopefully long-term developing stakeholder networks among local communities and demonstrating replicability, that these things that have been done in these 49 communities could be done in any community. So we hope to create models for all aspects of community initiative needed to reduce emissions that can be used throughout the country to meet the challenges we face. And just as an aside, on June 17th, Peter Bardaglia of the Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative organized. Three of us, Ken Schlatter, myself, and him, went to another conference in Washington called the Local Clean Energy Leadership Conference. Very much similar, but a different group of communities, where we talked about the power partnerships, fostering climate protection collaboration among local governments, businesses, universities, and nonprofits, focusing on the effort here in Tompkins County. Between the leadership of Tompkins County as a government and setting the goal and the policies, to the collaboration fostered by the Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative, to the implementation through the Tompkins County Energy Conservation Corps, organized by Cornell Cooperative Extension. And both of these conferences made it clear that the federal agencies of DOT, HUD, EPA, and DOE share common objectives regarding energy efficiency, renewable energy, climate change, and livable communities that they're trying to work together toward. And I'm happy that we're a part of it, and we are addressing the whole range of those issues in this community.
Thank you very much, Ed. Any questions for Ed? Yeah, don't walk away. Any questions?
I think applause is in order.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ed, I do have a question. And Kent, your mention of Kent reminded me of it. There was at the last TICFI meeting, there was mention of on-bill financing as an option that the state legislature passed.
Yes.
And I got to the meeting late, so I only heard the end. Could you explain that?
Well, they've passed what appears to amount to a pilot project where utilities will be required next year to offer on-bill financing as a means of paying for energy efficiency improvements that people would make to their homes. I'm not sure if it applies to businesses as well. I think they have a target number that the utilities are being asked to meet in terms of participation. And then beyond that remains to be seen. But it's a very good step because this kind of a program has worked very well in other places, other parts of the country where it's been instituted. And it just makes it's one step that makes it easier for the consumer to take something that makes economic sense to them anyway. Because on this on-bill financing, they'll see that the energy savings pay for the financing of the improvements, and they get some net positive benefit in addition to that. So that's the way the program's designed. So the person would be guaranteed a positive return, and hopefully that will eventually expand to be available to anybody. But in this pilot, I don't think they've worked out the exact logistics of that yet.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks very much. For my report, a couple of items. Next Monday, after you've gone to the broadband meeting, at the 6th, July 25th, at 6:30, there's a meeting at the Women's Community Building on the new gas drilling, DSGEIS from the DEC. There will be four speakers there who will help people understand what's in the document. Lou Alstead, a former industry engineer, Tony Ingraffia, Cornell scientist, Karen Edelstein, who's GIS and mapping person, and Roger Downs from the Sierra Club Atlantic chapter. So that's 6:30, the doors open, 7 o'clock is the beginning of the panel. And also related to that, I wanted to mention that I was fortunate enough to be invited to a meeting, as Carol was with some folks at the comptroller's office, a phone meeting last week that was held, phone conference that was held up at Cornell. And it was focused on, for the gas industry, the issue of the severance tax and the ad valorem tax, the property tax value placed on the production at a gas well. And there are some very serious concerns about the fact that New York and Pennsylvania are the only two states, I believe, that have no severance tax for this industry. And there's very, very little. The regulations on the ad valorem tax, I think 1978 was when they were most recently updated, I think, Carol. So there's going to be some continuing work on that to try to wake up the state, because if I think environmentalists have avoided talking about the taxes, not wanting to admit that the industry might come. But I think it's very clear that whether it comes or not, the infrastructure in terms of taxation really needs to be in place before permits are started. I wanted to remind folks that I've asked you, Stephen Estes has asked you to do the final two surveys for our direct report staff people, Jonathan Wood and David Squires. Last I heard from Stephen, I think we had 6 surveys completed. So please take a few minutes, and it'll take more than a few minutes. It's important. It's really part of our core responsibilities as legislators. And finally, what date was that? July 9th, I think it was. I went to New York City for, I mentioned the Medicaid working group that I was appointed to as part of the Mandate Relief Council for, not the Mandate Relief Council, Mandate Relief Task Force from the executive, from the governor's office. So it was a 3-hour meeting co-chaired by Stephen Aquario from NYSAC. Having spoken with Steve ahead of time, and Joe and I spoke with him ahead of time about what the purpose of this task force would be, the given charge is that we're supposed to be telling New York State what kind of reforms there should be to the Medicaid program and how local, in terms of program streamlining, and how state and local responsibilities should be divvied up. So I started out the meeting by saying the fiscal responsibility should be divvied up quite differently than it is right now, and sort of went through the case for that the state should be picking over the program costs of Medicaid, and NYSAC's proposal for how that might be done using Affordable Care Act funding. So there was that was well received. Maggie Brooks is also was also there. She's the county executive from Monroe County and sort of supported that same idea. So it was really, I think, well received that whenever we will be producing a report, and that front and center will be a recommendation that the state needs to adopt state financing of Medicaid. There will be 3 other meetings coming up to delve into this. We also were able to make people know that NYSAC did a report on exactly this issue a year ago, and that should be the next thing we all read. And then the Department of Health had written a response to that report, which was the thing after that we should all read, so that a lot of work has already been done, and that we thought it was important that this task force not just ignore it. So I feel good about even though the other folks at the meeting were much more expert in terms of providers and practitioners in the field, I felt like it was important to have counties at the table. And thanks to Gene Brockway and Patricia Carey at DSS, I was able to really have a good understanding of what some of the issues were to raise. So that's I just wanted to let you know how that went, and I'll keep you informed on it. So if there are no questions, County Administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. Just a couple of quick items tonight. First of all, I want to thank everyone on this legislature for the work you've done to allow us to complete our corporate compliance plan on the deadline for the Office of Medicaid Inspector General. You've been very much a part of this process. You've undergone training, all 15 of you. That's now done. That was a companion effort to what happened on the staff side of the organization, led very ably by Paul Younger over the past several months to bring this very complicated program to a very successful closure. I should note that other departmental people who have worked on this on the Compliance Committee, Patricia Carey, Greg Potter, Jonathan Wood, Anita Fitzpatrick, David Squires, Frank Krupa, Bob DeLuca, Betsy Doling, all gave up a great deal of their time to work their way through something that, in fact, is very common sense. It really memorializes what we do well, which is to operate with honesty, integrity, transparency, and efficiency. It makes sure that we are doing that. I think we're all confident that historically we have. We would, even without this. But under the current rules that we operate under, this is something that needs to be done. We did it. There'll be a resolution that comes to your first meeting in August to put a punctuation mark on this and to adopt the plan. So really, we thank you, and I thank Paula especially for the work that was done on this. Second item, you've all been very patient in trying to find a retreat date that works for most of you. It looks like most of you can attend a retreat on the 27th in the evening, but not all. We are planning to go forward with that if it works for the group. It would be from 5:30 to 8:30. It would be at the Department of Health.
27th of what month?
Of this month. This month. I think some of you may have to straddle a couple of meetings to be able to do it. But it's the best we can do in the many times that we've tried to put out there. Our topic is going to be how to better align resources with priorities. Very broad topic. Hopefully we can work our way through it. So that's our plan, at least unless we hear objections to the contrary. I did send out a very lengthy email a couple of days ago, I think over the weekend, for you to take a look at in preparation for that. So hopefully you will have a chance to do that and get back to me with any comments you have on that as early as tomorrow.
Where will that be?
At the Rice Conference Room at the Department of Health.
Joe, the survey, you're looking for comments on the survey, and then you'll be asking us to actually, you'll revise and send comments back before the retreat, right?
That's correct. At this point, I'm just seeking comments on the approach generally and on the survey document specifically.
Carol?
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand better. I did read all of that and look through the survey. Haven't answered the questions yet. At this retreat, which I'm one of the people I can't attend, are you going to be actually coming to conclusions about the rating of the questions in the survey, or are you talking about how to come to agreement about the prioritization of the areas you divided our world into?
I'm hoping that a survey will lay a groundwork for a discussion about priorities. That'll be a starting point. And that will be then continued at the retreat. And as a consequence of the retreat, if there is anything that looks like consensus about priorities, I think it will be revealed. Could also be revealed that there isn't. So, again, it's really an exercise to find out, are there priorities attached to certain goals and functions of our government or not?
Okay, so I had a concern then about how the questions were framed in the survey. They are with a very broad brush. Do you support arts and culture in the community? Do you support, what value do you place on that? Do you support public safety, a secure community, and where do you rate that? So I guess I hope you find a way to talk about those that don't assume that any of those are an all or nothing prospect. So I had concerns as I thought about how would I answer these questions that, well, if I rate this one as a 5 or a 4 or a 3 or whatever the rating was, does that say this is the part of the budget that should absolutely be preserved above all others versus keeping it, sort of adjusting the balance between the parts of the the budget. So I had a hard time seeing how I was going to answer the survey
questions. I think you,
given the broad strokes.
Right. If there are specific suggestions on how to improve it, that's what the next few days are about. That's what I'm looking for right now in terms of how to improve that. I think if you look, though, it's not so much an all or nothing, I like or don't like. I think it recognizes that we do things for a reason. They all have value. It does touch on broad goals, but then it tries to go from broad goals to our specific programs. So it's really a task that the legislature would be involved in, as will department staff and managers. So go through it, and if there are suggestions, believe me, this is an art, not a science, and we're open to that.
Kathy and then Pat, but first, Carol, to clarify. So you don't want us to answer that survey yet. You want us
not
to
yet.
Comment on it as the comments you're making right now. Send Joe that kind of feedback. He will revise, assuming there are comments, revise as necessary, and then send us within by Thursday or Friday.
That's my goal.
To send us back a survey we can fill out. As you know, this one was a PDF. You couldn't actually fill it out.
Okay. So I'm gone all next week. So how do I get the survey in time to answer it before I leave, if that's what you're going to be talking
well,
about?
Well, if I hit my goal, you will have it, let's say, by the end of business Friday. If I don't,
thanks.
If I don't, and you have access to a computer and can get your email, then it's an electronic survey, and it's web-based. So you would be able to access it from wherever you are as long as you have access to the Internet.
This guy needs a vacation. Come on.
Kathy and then Pat.
Thanks. My comment concerns the first part of your report where you talked about the corporate compliance effort. And I'm trying to clarify in my mind what the overall situation is, because it sounds as though we had a questionnaire or something that we had to fill out, but now there's a plan that we need to comply with. And what are the efforts that need to go on from here? Because we're not really all complied now, are we? I mean, isn't it an ongoing effort?
It's absolutely an ongoing effort. So the first order of business is a compliance plan. That's something that has been drafted over the course of this process by Paula and the committee. There is training of legislators, of managers and staff, so everybody in the county will receive training. There will be regular reviews to see how it's going. So there is an ongoing review and forever. There is a hotline that's established. So if people would like to advise us of concerns that they may have about waste, fraud, or abuse, there's a hotline to take those calls. So there is a process that is put in place with the conclusion of the development of the compliance plan. Yes, so it's ongoing.
I'm just trying to figure out where the plan relates to the things that were just done and when the plan will be. I'm envisioning
right.
the hotline on the front, you know, of our web page to where people can
right.
really have an
Absolutely.
Opportunity to report fraud, waste, and abuse, and
right.
The profile of this effort having being something that everyone in the community can know about and have access
yeah,
to.
And we just put up, the compliance plan. Is it the plan that's on the Internet now?
Yeah.
You want to speak to it?
Actually, if you go to visit our homepage now, you'll see there's some highlighted sections. There's a starred list of items to the right of the homepage. And either second or third from the top, there is reference to our corporate compliance program. And so when you click there, a lot of the information, Kathy, that you've been talking about, just an overview of the plan, there is the information to our, we're calling it a helpline and not a hotline, but anyway, the telephone number to our helpline is there. A lot of the information that I shared with all of you when we did the training, the fact sheet series and things like that, you'll be able to link there. So that will also be very helpful to outside vendors and contractors that might be doing business with us that would also need to know information about our program. I will say that the web page or site is a work in progress. So as the plan becomes formally approved by you, there will be a link there to those kinds of things. So that format is in place.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And,
thanks, Joe.
This is not corporate compliance. Wasn't there another word?
Well, we agree that we would refer to our program as the county compliance program. But I will say that when I have an opportunity to talk with staff, as a matter of fact, I did a training for the solid waste department just this afternoon. I've also had training with the health department supervisors. And what I've explained to them is that corporate really means all-encompassing, all of the policies, practices, internal monitoring procedures that we use in the county to minimize risk and our vulnerability to things. And so in that, I explained the word corporate because externally, it is sort of an industry standard term. And so if our staff are asked whether or not we have a corporate compliance program, I want them to be aware of the term so that they can acknowledge, yes, that we do. But we are referring to our own plan as the county compliance program.
Thank you, Paula. Pat? I just wanted to give a couple of thank yous. One to Paula for all the work that's gone into the county and corporate compliance plan. I know it's probably not the most glamorous work that that we do around here, but it's certainly important to the way the county does business, and it seems to me that it's been handled very, very well, and I just want to say I appreciate that. The other thing is I want to say thank you to Joe for the work that's gone into creating a retreat that will be meaningful in helping us to talk about priorities. From the time that we started talking about this, a lot of the feedback has been fairly skeptical, I'll say, about whether or not it will do any good for us to come together and try to talk about priorities. And it may turn out to be that way, but I think that a lot of sincere work has gone into this, and I appreciate the thought that's gone into creating this survey. The way you've been able to conceptualize some of this stuff, Joe, is just really remarkable, I think, and I thank you for your work.
Thank you, Pat. Dooley?
Well, I'm concerned about the retreat and the fact that not everyone could be there, because it sounds as though it's the intention of the retreat to arrive at some ranking, if possible, of what we do, which is what prioritization, I think, is. I'm concerned about the survey because even if the categories for the descriptive categories are words, I don't know what you're using now, critical, crucial, important. There are a lot of words you could choose. They can easily be converted to numbers and just tallied up. And that's something that I find quite scary because it's too simple a way, in my view, to look at these things. So I have a couple of things I want to suggest. One is, if we've really not been able to find a time when everyone can attend a retreat, we could take one of our regularly scheduled legislative meetings and turn it into a retreat. We have a meeting tonight that only has four resolutions on it. It's nice to have presentations. It's nice to have other things. But some of the summer meetings can be very brief, and we could maybe have a time when all legislators could be at this budget retreat. The other thing that's not clear to me is whether the purpose of the retreat is to have something in place for Joe to use when he creates his recommended budget, or whether the purpose is something for us to use when we get into our deliberations. And I suppose ideally it could be used for both, but one would need to happen earlier than the other would need to happen. So I am... Although I can attend this date, I'm not sure that it's the best decision. So my suggestion is to take a legislative meeting instead so everyone could be present.
Well, I thank you, Dooley. I do want to make everybody aware that we tried, I don't know, a dozen or more dates, and the lowest number we could get where people couldn't come was two, and that's this date. Everything else was three or more people would be absent. Now, I think the question of how do we use this process, I think that's up to us. Well, how we use it is up to us. How Joe uses it is up to Joe. I think it's a valuable exercise for each of us to go through individually, whether we actually, similar to the budget simulator process, whether we, you know, have group consensus of any sort at all, it's still an important thing for us all to do. The idea of it being at a summer instead of or after a legislative meeting, I think if it's the second August meeting, that's really too late to help you at all, Joe, right? If it's the first one, that's August 2nd, would that still be in time to give you some enough, you know, some reading of our priorities in terms of your process?
Yeah, I mean, I get the departmental request next Monday or Tuesday. So it'll still be, I mean, the information will still be being processed by me on the 2nd. Time flies during that month of August. So, you know, it moves very quickly. But if a goal is to provide me some guidance, you know, we're getting late, but that would still be time to do that.
And I would want to make sure that we don't have no legislative business. I would, perhaps we could eliminate legislative privilege of the floor, staff reports, my report, et cetera. So trim the agenda way down to the business. But if we have business for the next ledge meeting, I think we should have that business and then follow with the retreat. So that's the only way I would see that would be okay.
Well, the quickest thing is to see if everybody is going to be at the next meeting.
So there you go. Okay. How many people expect to be here August 2nd? August 2nd is the right date, right? August 2nd. Is there anybody who knows... Is there anybody who knows the next legislature meeting? Is there anybody who knows they can't be here at the next legislature meeting? I won't commit this to you in case you get sick. That's okay. All right. So that's there's your answer on that, Dooley. So that's 15 is better than 13. All right. I had Pat, then Pat, Jim, Brian, Frank in response to this, I guess. Pat?
I'd just like to say in response to the concern that Dooley has expressed, and with respect, I think at its most basic, setting a budget is a matter of prioritization. We have a limited amount of resources, and we have to decide how we're going to dispense those resources. And we can do as we did last year, which was my first time going through this process, and simply let whatever other forces are at work during the budget process bring something to us, and then we make decisions here on the floor following whatever discussion we have. That's one way to do it. But to think that we don't have influences that are coming into that process and that we aren't in some way setting priorities, I think, is sort of negates the reality, because I do think that is exactly what we do. And I think that as the people that have to make the ultimate decision, especially in a year such as this, that we really should be the ones who are giving some guidance to the people putting together the budget proposal as to what our priorities are. So it's a little scary to me to think about going through a process like we went through last year without having had some kind of discussion by the whole group of priorities.
Jim?
I've been here 5 years, and the last 2 years on this budget committee and the year before that, and I've looked into what other counties do, and I'm not suggesting that they are any better or worse for what they do. But there are some counties with three times the budget we have that do their budget in 3 weeks. We have a budget process that takes roughly 2 months, not including what the county administrator does with the department heads. I think what you have to view this as is, number one, an information-seeking process, when you have a survey like is online, and if you view it as something that you're going to get a final answer out of, then that's the wrong way to do it, because that's not going to work. If you, and Pat, I want to disagree with you just a little bit. A budget is a priority list. The way we put it together is what we do, and it could be the wrong way to name priorities, but that's what we end up with. And I think the process in the last 2 years has been markedly better than it was prior to that, when there was very little or no discussion past the cap, the number that we would set, and then it was completely out of our hands until it got back to the budget again. I think this is, again, another way of getting information. We have a budget simulator. People are learning how to use it, and some better than others, and we now have this. I think as this process moves ahead, there will be other ways that we can set priorities, but I really believe that you can't hope that one survey is going to be your answer. It's going to help you come up with an answer, and it's to direct people's thoughts. Let me just use my own example. Carol brought up arts and entertainment in the community versus public safety. Well, the people I represent are way more interested in public safety than arts and entertainment. So I think when we look at all the categories in the county budget, we have to, in this time frame, in 2011, decide, okay, what are important core things that we have to do? And, you know, this is going to help us do that. And I'm not suggesting that's the only way it's going to help us, but it will help us more than we've done in the past. My final question, did we just change this thing to a legislator meeting?
Not yet.
All right.
Okay. Before I go to the list, Frank, I really hate to do this. I'm sorry I haven't asked you privately. Could you put whatever it is in that bag on your desk and eat it from the desk? The noise somehow gets to me. Maybe it's because I haven't eaten myself. So I'm sorry. I really hear it, and it blocks everything. Thank you. Brian, Frank, Dooley, and then Peter and Carol.
I guess Jim just asked my question. Let's say, for example, that at the August 2nd meeting something happens and somebody is not going to be able to be there. Do we then cancel that again? And I think it's pretty good that we were able to get 13 people for next week. And this is nothing that's going to come out of this. It's going to be set in stone. It's simply something to give Joe a little bit of guidance just to get going. I can't imagine all the work and preparation, mindful of the fact we have some real cuts that have to be made. And I would think he would want to get going. And no, it's not a consensus of the entire group. And Carol and whoever else can't be there can certainly submit their survey. And, I just think we've got to get going. And at the end product is going to be decided by us, the priorities, in our own budget deliberations that are going to be going on from September to November.
Let me just answer that. I agree, but on the other hand, this is, if we can accommodate this, I would not want to be one of the folks who couldn't make it either. So it's a critical time. It's not the end of the discussion at all, but this is just a test to see if we can make this work. And so that's why we're discussing it. Frank?
Did you want to share what I was eating?
It's okay. Is it chocolate?
Pardon me? It's tofu.
That's right.
Do you like that? Two things. First, we've already spent almost 25 minutes talking about this topic. We have, with all due respect to Dooley, and those of you that would like to do this at a regular legislative meeting, this is such an important piece of what we do. I think Mike or Jim was describing it just a few minutes ago. I would like not to do this at a legislative meeting, simply because we usually have other business. Even as short as this agenda is tonight, we're probably going to be here till 8 o'clock anyway, plus the executive session Martha has talked about. Are any of you going to want to get into talking about the process that Joe is describing? Because that is going to take a lot of deliberation. I would not be in favor of putting this on the agenda and moving things around with, and I'm sorry that some of our colleagues won't be able to make it. Not all of us can make a lot of other meetings either. Secondly, the type of items that are in this, I think Jim said it, this is just one more tool on in a list of, or perhaps one of many in the list of how we're going to make budget decisions. This isn't going to quantify, and I really hate to put numbers on it. I really do, saying that if you've achieved this number and ten of us agree, this is the priority. I sent my response to Joe earlier today was I was pleased to see that he tried to keep politics out of this. We all have different priorities around this table, and some of them are on that list. And I could see some of that wanting to be reflected upon. So I think the time ought to be spent with this as a single topic. What did you budget for this, Joe, 2 or 3 hours?
Yeah, 3 hours.
And in an atmosphere where it's a little more relaxed than this, usually when we do this, it's a little more informal. And we can talk a little more candidly with one another. Anyway, I would opt not to do this at a legislative meeting.
Abdulli, Peter, Carol, and Kathy, and then maybe we should just vote.
I would be happy to substitute this for a legislative meeting. Our chair would not be happy doing that because we have some work to do. But I think there are many pieces of our agenda that could be foregone for one meeting. With respect to prioritization, Pat, it's not that I think prioritization isn't important. It's what we all do when we make our budget decisions. It's a very complicated matrix with many dimensions for me, and I can't reduce it to a two-dimensional chart on a piece of paper. I've gone through prioritization exercises in the past. I remember putting colored dots up on program areas. I think it's worth trying to do, but I also would be very surprised if it works well. If consensus just means a simple majority, that is not to me satisfactory. If consensus means everybody agrees this has to get a lot of attention this coming year, that's a different thing. And it's not clear to me how things are going to be scored, so that's why I raised that as an issue. But I really think, to the extent that we all agree that this is an important thing to do, we should all be able to be there.
Okay, let's try to limit our comments to, should we do this August 2nd or July 27th? Pat, I don't know, Peter?
Yeah, I'd like to say a few words more than just my comments. No, okay, but if that's okay. I think I must be turning into a Republican because I share what my colleagues Frank and Brian said. I think it's a mistake to have it at this meeting. What?
And the problem is what?
If you knew my wife, you'd understand what a problem is. But I think that it would be a mistake to put it in a legislative meeting. I think that retreat is a good word. It means something. It means change your attitude somehow. And I think sitting around this table simply will make the whole exercise much less fruitful than if we went to a different place and focused on this and only this issue. So. And now for my longer musing. Setting priorities is a funny... I set my priorities by in how I spend my money by what the purchases I make. I don't do it in any kind of rational way, but I can know my priorities if I look at where the money I have goes. And I think it's the same sort of thing here. The budget process, as I see it, is first Joe sets his priorities, and then we set our priorities. And these are both simply what the decisions that we make, what Joe makes in the administrator's budget, and then how we change that are his priorities and our priorities. That's all it means. Now, I applaud, I mean, I felt during the last budget process that this was not a sufficient way, that there ought to be more interaction between the legislators and the administrator in the early stages of the budget preparation, and that this twofold way didn't make what I think was the right way to actually make the final decision. And so, I mean, that's why I like the idea of the simulator, because it's sort of in a game-playing mode, makes you make the legislators make decisions just on their own, and just to see how that works out. And we'll see how that works out. But I approve of this. I think that the idea of setting these goals will in fact give Joe some idea when he makes his decisions as the administrator's budget what we're thinking in some vague way. And so I think that's a good idea to try to make this kind of communication between us and him go on by the way we respond to the question of setting goals. So I think it's something that's worth doing. I think it should be done in a retreat format, and let's just do it.
Carol, Kathy, then I'm going to say a word or two.
Boy, I didn't, in asking the question, I didn't really mean to promote this kind of discussion.
Okay.
But I'm glad that I did. I just want to be very clear that whenever we do it, I will say that I think that whenever we go to set dates that we all need to be at, we really need to go for dates when we have this kind of thing that are like a month in advance. And I'm sorry, I tried for 2 months to get my husband to sit down and pick a date a week that we could go away, and he finally did it, and the next day this came out. My concern is that as we prioritize, that we do it in a way that looks at, do we each believe individually and come to some collective decision about the size of the spending on this item versus that item? I think that we had several ways to do that. I think that the budget simulator, it was a very good idea of a way to do that, and we've got that out there, and it's a tool that many of us haven't sat down and actually tried to use yet. Some of us don't think in terms of numbers. I'd personally have liked to see that be a slider, a bar chart up and down, and I could slide those bars up and down and see, to begin with, that the spending on this item, and you know, we've got a program book here of 300 different programs, those are the ones that I'd like to weigh in on and that I think we agreed to weigh in on. So a slider that says, okay, this part of our program is already up here and this part's all, you know, a little down here. I don't realize the tape, the notes can't see this, but, you know, and do I want to slide this one up or down a little bit? Do I want to slide this one up or down a little bit? And how much is sliding that one going to mean I have to slide the others? You know, and talking about it in the context of these programs is just a very different question than, you know, do I want to put a 1 to 5 on, I don't know, promoting human rights? It, you know, if I put a 1, does that mean I want a 0 compared to something else? I want a 5. And to me, it just doesn't get at the fine-tuning, the slider we have to do on all those 300 program parts of our budget. So I was just looking for a way, as you're going to talk about this, whether it's a time I can be there or not, that we get it that fine-tuning rather than go back to these you know, yes, I believe in democracy and civil discourse. That's not the question. We all believe in that. The question is, do we want to spend what it takes to create a transcript of every meeting and put it online or put it perpetually in the tapes online or pay for TV time? Or do we want to, you know, can we promote democracy by putting our notes on a different kind of website that are there? Those are different kinds of spending concerns than I think the latest iteration of the survey gets to, and I liked the earlier iteration of the prioritization process.
Kathy?
Thank you. I'll tell you what my concern is. I'll do it whenever, and whatever tools are available, I'll use whatever I can to make decisions, as I've been doing for almost 10 years. I'm worried that if we put this in addition to a legislature meeting, we'll be here till 9, 10, or 11 o'clock. My attention span, although I can focus for 2 hours, it fades after 2 hours. 3-hour meetings are difficult for me, so the retreat time frame in itself, being at 3 hours, is really stretching me, especially on a weeknight when I get up at 4:45 in the morning and do physical labor all day the next day. So I would just request that if we do move this to a legislative meeting night, that we be cognizant of people's responsibilities and not go on until all hours of the night. I don't think we make good decisions that way. The last part I'd like to say is that I agree with some of the people who have stated that they feel that this would be an effective tool, would help provide information for Joe and for us to communicate amongst ourselves. But in terms of actually providing a majority rules kind of a prioritization decision, I don't think it would function well. And I think that many of us have stated that. Still, as many have stated, we got to communicate about this. This is, you know, part of the give and take that this kind of discourse takes. And so let's get on with it whenever.
Thanks, Kathy. I appreciate having this conversation. And at the risk of Joe running screaming from the room and deciding, turning in his resignation, I think the slight delay to go to August 2nd, I think we should discipline ourselves on what comes up as a meeting, as the legislature meeting. And I think it really respects our colleagues to go that length to have all of us there. So that would be my choice.
We could relocate also. We don't have to stay in these chambers.
Which adds extra time, so.
5 minutes.
Okay.
Can we set a time limit on it?
Let's vote.
On the retreat?
Proposing about if it, the time be moved to a different date, could we set a time limit on the total time of the evening so that those of us that have difficulty would be respected, their needs would be respected?
I think we would figure out how to do that. Yeah. Okay.
Could that be part of the proposal is what I'm asking, rather than figuring it out on the fly? Because what often happens in those situations, we have a majority rules vote, and it's like, Kathy, if you're tired, go home. Some of us get disenfranchised.
All right, so you were planning a 3-hour meeting for the retreat?
Yes.
So if we make sure we only have, I can't limit public comment, public privilege at the floor, but if we have a half an hour added to that on for our business, that should be more than enough. And so that's what I would say, that we would be out of here by 9 o'clock. I'm going to say that's the proposal. Like, if you don't like it, just vote no. If you like it, then vote yes, and we can tweak it later. You know, we have to move on. So the idea is to do it August 2nd and be out by 9 o'clock, or do it July 27th, be out by 8:30, right? It's a 5:30, 8:30, Joe?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor of July 27th, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. August 2nd, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
That's a good vote.
10 to 6? That doesn't...
10 to 6.
What?
Joe voted with 6.
Well, I'm pretty sure the July 27th was more than the August 2nd. Right? Okay. Jonathan?
How many people are going to show up for July 27th?
13. And if there aren't 13 people here, we have a problem. All right, Joe, that wasn't even your whole report, right?
It is now. that was my whole report. Yes.
Seriously?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
No report.
David Squires, Finance Director.
I want to report on that Thursday we're having a note sale, and this is our most current official statement that we have to publish. Every time we have a competitive sale over $1 million, we publish an official statement. And we'll say this costs us around $2,000 every time we have one. It's got some useful information in it, but I will say something new on it, because on a cover it says, see new tax levy limitation law, herein. Mm. And when you go into page 11, it lists the cites certain court cases which deal with the impairment of the full faith and credit of a municipality. And I'll just read this final paragraph. Therefore, while the tax limitation law may constrict an issuer's power to levy real property taxes for the payment of debt service on debt contracted after the effective date of the tax limitation law, it is clear that no statute is able to limit an issuer's pledge of its faith and credit to the payment of any of its general obligation indebtedness, or to limit an issuer's levy of real property taxes to pay debt service on general obligation debt. And that is so the market's not scared off. And it says, it is likely the tax levy limitation law will be subject to judicial review to resolve the constitutional issues raised by its adoption. So this will be our first test, I guess, whether there's any impairment on the interest rate environment for municipalities. I'm not expecting any. The market right now is pretty good for debt. On the same day as our sale is about seven other issues. Ours is sort of like in the middle of the volume, but we should do the best because we have the best credit rating of any people issuing on the date on July 21st. So I'll give this to the clerk, and it's available online, this report, and we're going to link the county webpage to the report.
Thank you very much, David. Frank?
Dave, two questions. One is, you alerted us a couple of weeks ago with regard to the change Moody's proposed to look at counties and their ratings. Does that the issue reflect any potential change other than the statement, the alert that it
gives? No. And actually, this is not a rated issue because we don't. The market generally doesn't require a rating for a bond anticipation note.
Thank you. Thanks,
Mike. Mike.
Dave, I read the news reports about sales tax. Many counties seen big increases in the percentage of sales tax. Ours looked a little anemic next to them. Is that because we didn't lose as much?
We haven't gotten the details of the quarter, but there was a big. In the month of June, the income compared to June of last year was down by $300,000. So while at the end of May we were 3.25% ahead of last year, at the end of June we're only 1.8% ahead of last year. And overall, it doesn't look as bad because percentage-wise, where we should be at this time of year, we're still on track to meet the budget. But there's something that happened dramatically, and I'm assuming it's an adjustment that was made at the end of the quarter. But it was rather disappointing. The first month, the actual June was down by 5% over last year.
Thanks.
Pam?
I just want to know, David, where you got that tie.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Somebody guessed his weight.
I was thinking the Congo Square Markets.
All right. Thank you, David. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda, Frank?
I'd like to withdraw Resolution B.
All right.
Which one?
B is in boy.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, I will read the consent items. If anybody wants one pulled, just holler. Resolution A, announcement of grant from the Health Planning Council of Tompkins County for falls prevention projects through the Weatherization Referral Assistance and Packaging Program and Project Care Programs of the Office for the Aging. Resolution C, allocation of room occupancy tax funding. Resolution D, amending resolution number 224 of 2010, changes in positions, planning department.
And can one, that come off?
That's off, okay. And one, appointment to the Public Information Advisory Board, Stacy Shackford. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Kathy moves, Frank seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. All right, for the sake of staff, let us first do the planning one and then the budget one, if that's okay. And Pam, if you just say go through this resolution and report later.
Go through the one that Carol just pulled off
yeah.
the agenda?
Yeah, B.
Okay, I would like to move Resolution D, amending Resolution number 224 of 2010, changes in positions, planning department, and I so move.
That came out of budget. You know, because it's the planning department.
You're right.
It came out of budget. Excuse me.
Well, it should have come out of planning.
All right, Jim.
Well, while Pam was talking, I was moving my lips. So does that work?
Try it again.
Amending resolution number 224 of 2010, changes in positions, planning department. I would move that.
And second by?
Second.
Peter. Okay, Carol, your question.
Well, I have a question, sorry, Pam, I did try to call you three times about this and couldn't reach you. I have two questions. One is, shouldn't this have come through the PDEC committee? And it looks to me as though this is making permanent changes to the hours of two positions in the planning department. I do recall, in terms of the work program discussion we had at PDEC, talking about needing to change that for 2011. I don't remember talking about how that would change the work plan permanently to have two positions have their hours reduced, and I just was hoping we might have the chance to do that, unless there
okay.
already been some discussion
pretty sure
and
Ed,
something about
that's why
it.
Ed is here. Ed, do you want to answer those questions?
These changes were actually part of last year's budget. We delayed two positions. Every other position in the department's already been reduced. These two were delayed because we had someone who came back part-time after maternity leave, and we had the ability to have two people work actually 2.5 more hours up until now than was budgeted. So this was really would have been done in December for January, except that we knew we had someone coming back part-time from maternity leave and kept two positions at the higher level they had been at. So this is not a change, really. It's just a delay.
So do you mean this to be a change for just the 2011 full year or permanently into the future?
Every budget year, you know, you do your budget and you do the hours of staff based on what you present as a budget. So, but it's at this point it becomes permanent unless it's changed.
So I guess it's the word permanent that I have problems with.
Well, every other position except for one has been reduced permanently in our department already.
Well, can I ask the chair of PDEC whether you feel like we need to table this and have further discussion about the work plan and whether we can accommodate all that we expect out of planning?
This is in the budget.
It's in the it's the budget. We don't have any money to pay beyond this number of hours starting now.
And
Joe?
If I may, permanent means 2011. This is for retirement service credit to make sure these people get a full retirement service credit for the time they work this year. So it's an adjustment for that technical reason. You can change these hours as a part of the budget process for 2012. So when we say permanent, look at that as for this year.
Well, then can we say that? Whereas is the intention of the planning department to make these changes permanent for the 2011 budget year?
I don't.
No, it's understood.
I think for the clarity presented to the comptroller's office, this is good wording. As long as the legislature knows, you can change these hours, really at your will. But for the moment, for now, it's 2011, it's for retirement service credit, and it's good, clear language.
It's my understanding we have full-time people who are working 35, 37 and a half, and 40 hours, correct?
Yes.
So for the sake of retirement, that's adequate, and so this is to make it clear that that's intended to be full-time. Okay? All right, ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution D, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Jim, I would ask you to go through...
And I will do that. Authorizing...
Jim, wait. If I can just say, we should take a break for the sake of the cameras, et cetera, but I'm hoping that we can do this one relatively quickly so we don't mess up our recording.
Let me do it, okay?
Yeah, go.
Resolution E was a yellow insert in the authorizing Tompkins County to pay the difference in pay between military pay and base pay county salary to county officers and employees while performing ordered military duty. And I would move that.
And second by Leslin.
Let me just mention a couple things. The legislature, prior to me coming here and about half of us, began this process in after 9/11. You did a resolution from 101 to 02. You did another from 02 to 03, and did another from 04 to 05. Nothing in 06. 7 through 8, 9, beginning of 9 through the end of 9. The current resolution, it will cover us from 12/31/20 through 2011. And under military law, Article 11, Section 242, you're allowed 30 calendar days, 22 working days, whichever is greater. And this went through the committee a month ago, and I think it should go through as is this time. We have one person who is it affecting. Anita's here to answer any questions you have. Joe is answering questions that Peter Stein gave in asked in government op, and I would give the floor to either one of those. Go ahead,
Joe.
Thanks, Jim. Peter Stein in the GO committee asked about whether we are unique in offering this small benefit. We did do a small survey, Peter, that looked at the city of Ithaca, Onondaga County, Broome County, Cortland County, Tioga, Ontario, tried to get Chemung and couldn't get a response there. So we looked at six nearby municipalities or counties. We found that half of them offer a benefit that actually exceeds ours. This is a 90-day plan. For a 90-day period, we pay the difference between what we would pay the individual and what the military pays. This is 90 days. In the city of Ithaca, Onondaga County, and Broome County, that benefit actually extends for a full year.
Yep.
And in two of those three, it also, the employer, Onondaga County and Broome County, also pick up the employee's share of health costs during the time that they're serving in the military. The other three counties don't provide the benefit. They simply go with military law, so that the employee gets that 22 days of benefit. So it's kind of a mixed bag. We looked at the public sector. I don't think this is a widely granted version on the private side. We looked only at the public side. Another question came up about why we didn't do this for 2 years during the history of our passage. And as Jim said, in those 2 years, there was really nobody who was at risk of being called up. Nobody was called up. So it was something we didn't need to do during those years. Now there is someone. I think the out-of-pocket for this, Anita, I believe is maybe $2,000 or $3,000. That's been our experience. So it's not a significant amount of county money, and again, it's for a limited period of time, 90 days. So that's what we've been able to compile in the way of information.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Joe. And Paula, I'm looking at Paula. If you would talk, there was a question about the revision of the policy itself. If you would give us an update about that process.
At the last GO meeting, one of the legislators made a request to take another look at the policy. It is, or it can be reviewed at any given time. That process is now in motion. The policy has been sent to all department heads for an impact review. I expect to have a summary of all of that information by the end of the week. And any other updates, I'll talk with Anita to make those changes, and then we'll move it on to the committee for its normal review and approval procedure. But that is in process right now.
Okay. Thank you very much. Julie, did I see your hand?
Yes, you did. I had a question. I guess it's for Jim. In calculating the difference in pay, do the re-up bonus payments count?
Well, I think I have never recalculated the difference in pay, so Anita can answer that question, I think.
It's generally calculated as the difference between base military and base county pay. So, in other words, for county purposes, you may have people who routinely work shift work, and that's not base pay. Or their overtime rate, that's not base pay. So it's whatever their base pay is as a county employee against base pay military. And that difference is also a differential based on rank in the military.
In recent months, there has been an increase in bonuses offered. That's why I asked. Because that would limit the hardship that employees might otherwise feel.
It's not an issue in any case that I've been working with. So,
well, it seems worth checking. Mm-hmm. With respect to this particular resolution, I would move to amend it by striking the whereas on line 19 as not needed as part of the resolution. That line reads, whereas there may be renewed need for activation of military personnel.
Is there a second for that? Pam seconds that. Any discussion of that amendment? Jim?
Why would you do that, Julie?
I don't understand why it's there to begin with. There's just been a recitation in the previous whereas of the fact, as you read, that the county has acted on this something less than annually ever since September 11th of 2001. And that seems sufficient to me. I don't think we have to anticipate there's going to be more need for call-ups.
Brian?
The resolution follows through the end of 2011. I don't have a problem with it. Is it going to have any effect on what we do to Jonathan or Joe or Anita?
What?
No.
No.
No. Okay. That's fine.
All right. That's friendly with you?
Yeah.
As the mover and the seconder was Leslin? Is that friendly?
It's fine.
Okay, so that part is struck, but now therefore be it, Lee is, stays. Brian, did you want to talk about this? Or?
Well, I guess we'll just, let's say, for instance, our country gets bombed by somebody and we have to retaliate. I guess we have to revisit this again at that point. But
Not as long as it's in 2011.
All right. I don't think that whereas makes any difference about it. So, Carol?
Wait, are we still on the amendment?
No, that was a friendly amendment to withdraw that language.
Line
that
19 language. Is gone.
Okay. I was under the understanding that there was some additional information, that we had tabled this before for some other additional information.
Oh, that's right.
That was going to come back to us that had to do with, I don't remember all of it, but one of the questions that I think was not answered had
history.
To do with,
Jim, just a second. Go ahead, Carol.
We didn't table this, Martha.
It was referred to committee.
Okay. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay.
Well, thank you for the correction.
Revisited.
So there were other additional pieces of information that I think were asked, and one of the questions that was asked had to do with what the private employers in this region do.
That's what Joe already said.
Right.
Those were city and counties.
But
nearby.
I said it's not common practice in the private
it
sector.
It's not common practice. Okay, that's because correct. I was just looking up what they did at Cornell, and from my knowledge, that is not. Not only that, I just found that they cancel your health insurance while you're gone, which is even worse. We've talked a lot here. I can't support this. I would be willing to have Anita take it back and look for some other way in which to help these individuals with increased costs or lost costs. But we've talked a lot here, an awful lot, about all of the ways in which the federal government and the state government make decisions, and assuming that the local level is going to be the last line of defense, picking up the costs for the decisions that they make. And we've had other ways in which we've, and many other areas in which we've said we just can't do that anymore. We can't continue to do that. For me, the amount of money that we spend sending, as a nation, sending people off to other regions of the world, and right now in particular to regions of the world for very, very expensive and extended periods of time for military activities that where we haven't even made a decision as a nation to do so. It's just not something that I can agree that in principle we're going to pick up as a local government the increase in costs or the backstop our local employees for whatever decisions are made at the federal level. Maybe I'm too much like the little kid who's pointing out the emperor has no clothes, and maybe that's a silly thing to do here over this issue. But I'm also Jewish, and maybe I'm one of those local officials saying I can't support a continued military activity. I can't carry out the decisions on the local level that are made on the national level and not even made after public discourse. It's just not something that I, in good conscience, can agree in this blanket kind of way that Tompkins County will pick up the difference in pay for those ordered to military duty in a way that would apply to everybody, regardless of what decisions are or aren't made publicly or not publicly at the federal level. And I just can't do it. So I'm going to vote against this.
I'm going to insert in here. I don't know what being Jewish has to do with it, but I don't want to know. So, Mike, Jim, Pam, Frank, then Peter.
I'd like to call the question.
Martha.
All right, the question's been called. Is that seconded by Jim?
It is.
All right. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All right, it is time to vote on Resolution E as amended with the amendment that was accepted.
I'm sorry, but the comment, I don't know what being Jewish has to do with it.
Yeah.
Okay. I really didn't appreciate that
as
a culturally insensitive comment.
All in favor of Resolution E, please raise your hand.
I'm sorry, what are we voting on, Martha?
Resolution E with that line taken out.
With 19 taken out.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. That passes. All right,
I just wanted to point out you lost me in the count last time. I'll holler next time I meet you because you keep losing me in the count. When I raise my hand and you acknowledge me, and then when you read off the names and I'm not in it. So, not the count of the vote, but the count of who's to speak next.
I had you down. Okay. I'm going to ask for a five-minute recess. The cameras already took a break, but I think we need a break. So please come back at 15:45. Thank you.